All right, Eugene, thanks for coming. Very excited to chat with you because we have prepped about 20 questions. Are you shocked to see all these questions?
Yes, a bit. I almost want to step out of this room. No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, three, four questions, no stress. Okay, for some of our audiences that might not know you, maybe give us a brief background about what were you doing before you set up your business in the year 2019. And of course, right now, you're across three locations, Singapore primarily, KL, Expansion, Cambodia, just got back from Cambodia. And you currently are live operating 1,200 rental units in Singapore, right? So maybe give us a quick background about yourself.
Hey, hi everyone. Thank you so much, Melvin, for having me today. So I started out like anyone sitting seated down here. So I started out in the real estate industry when I was 22 years old as a real estate salesperson. Wow.
Nice. Yeah.
So my RES number is R00 four digit 5000 51 something something.
You still have a license?
Yeah, right? I still keep my license. License very precious.
So
every year I still have to do CPD course, but I don't practice for many years already.
Right.
Yeah, so I started as a salesperson when I was doing my university as a part-time salesperson. That time I need money to pay school fee. You know, during our time only SMU was the first year, actually first year. So during junior college, I played too much rugby until I actually flung my A-level. Right. So the only
rugby
place wanted that I can go into was NTU, NIE, but I don't want to become a teacher. So in the end, I decided to SIM, or do an external degree. But the issue was that SIM at the point in time, your parents cannot use CPF to pay for your school fee. So in the second year, then I feel a bit embarrassed, to get money from my mom. So my friend tell me, hey, why not you just work as a real estate agent? Then you just go to the show flat. Then you close one unit, one penthouse, you can close $10,000. I remember my school fee was $7,800. Right. So in my mind, as 22 years old, my thinking was that, okay, all I need to do is to close one unit.
Mm.
Then can solve all my life problem.
Mm.
Yeah. So at that point in time, there was no license, there was no CA. You know, I remember my first agency was HSR.
Which year was that?
That was in 2007.
Mm.
So I remember going to Toa Payoh. That time very easy. You just had to pay, I think, $300 registration fee. Then they give you the PI, give you one box of name card, one lane yard, there you go, you can practice.
Start immediately. You can start immediately. Exams.
No exams. Yes. No exams.
Those were the days.
Those were the days.
Yeah.
So to cut a long story short, that at the point in time, my idea was, you know, just to get the, just pay for my school fee to carry on in life. Mm. Then one thing lead to another, that first year in real estate as a part-timer, I became one of the top rookie.
Mm.
So my first year, I did six figure during the first year.
Right.
Yeah, wow.
Six figure, I remember. Then worked very hard. Then second year, I dive into team building. So by the end of third year, I was having around 300 over salesperson.
Mm.
Yeah, in HSR. Then that's when Knight Frank called me and say, hey, why not you come over to meet the corporate? Bring your team over, but you be a corporate. Because I've been doing new home sales all my real estate career.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So I never really do the secondary market.
Right.
So I went to Knight Frank, then head up the project. New home sales department, was there for 4 years before I joined the developer side of things, Wing Thai. I was Wing Thai for 8 months as their assistant GM.
Mm.
Then before my big brother and mentor, Eric, the deputy CEO of Oxley, asked me to go over to join him.
Mm.
So I was with Oxley for coming almost 6 years.
6 years, right.
6 years. Then after that, then here I am now running the assembly place.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So why do you decide to go into co-living?
Okay, it's also a bit of a short story. So back in 2019, I was still in Oxley. So because of my background in real estate in the past, I still contact with a lot of my Indonesian clients. Because at that point in time, in the earlier days, I do a lot of project in the Holland area. So a lot of the Indonesians, some of them, we still keep in touch. So in 2019, I think somewhere in April, my old client actually came to find me for lunch.
Mm.
So in the course of having lunch, he was telling me one thing. He said, well, Eugene, Singapore residential property cannot buy. I think you heard of this before because the rental yield is so low. That was in 2019.
Mm.
He said he got this landed landed property behind Paragon, Jalan Elok. He said, all I need is to ask for $6,000. But no taker.
Was that an inter terrace?
Yeah, it was an inter terrace.
Right.
Before that lunch meeting, on the morning itself, I was on the way to work. So in the lift, I parked my car, go up to the 31st floor where my office is. I was in the, you know, it's a usual morning rush. So some of my finance colleagues who are Malaysian, they were complaining with each other, say that, you know, my landlord lah, it's very evil. Over the weekend, I was still sleeping, start butch into my room and off the aircon. Then I was just being very capable, very curious. I said, hey, I check with you. Where are you staying now? Is it a condo or is it a HDB? He say, Eugene, condo, where can afford? Of course, it's a public housing. Then I start asking more. So is it a master room or a common room? He say, it's a common room. Then I say, how much you pay? I pay around $850. Then in my mind, I was like, wow, $850. It's actually quite expensive for them. Then at that point in time, I just have this thought. Wow, that means you really got this gap in the market. People want good accommodation. Safe, because we heard a lot of nightmare, right?
Well, yep.
Room, I don't want to stay with the landlord. If the landlord is there, especially for ladies, right? Well, the landlord, is he a guy or is he a girl? Well, if he's a single guy, whether is he a pervert or is he, you know? So there's a lot of this on the ground issue I hear. Then in the afternoon, I was having lunch with Park. You know, I say, Park, then I straight have this talk. Hey, Park, why don't you rent to me? He said, what you want to do? I say, I want to do
Park
a social...
Your client that you're talking client, about, Indonesian client.
Indonesian
right.
client. He said, I want to run the social experiment. He said, what you want to do? Oh, I want to do something like a co-living. So at that point in time, the SMB place was not the pioneer in the co-living sector. I think we are number six.
I track, as in country level?
No, I mean, we are the sixth brand that is in Singapore.
Right.
Before
so
me,
so there
was
already five companies already.
It was around five companies.
Okay. Maybe share with us, like, for those audiences, maybe two questions, right? For audiences that probably is new to co-living. Maybe help us to define what is co-living.
Okay, so co-living, to the layman, co-living is room renter. But what is truly co-living, there's always a hardware and the software. The hardware, of course, is the real estate, the space that people stay. But the software and so-called the hardware is about building a very robust community. That means a group of people that come together, they stay within the four walls of the unit. Can they coexist together? Can they form a very effective community? And where true friendship can develop. It means it's not just like I come back home from work, I go into my room, I come out to the kitchen, I cook, eat already, I go back to my room. It's more than that. It's about getting to know each other, develop a friendship.
The social interaction.
Social interaction. It's the same.
And it's also not living with the landlord.
Yes, correct. It's not living with the landlord.
Maybe backtrack a little bit. When did this concept first started in the whole world? I mean, which country was
it? I remember it was in US and Europe country, it was already very popular.
Right.
So in US, it's a bit different. So some of the real estate developer, they look at aging industrial area, they turn it around to become so-called turn it around to be accommodation play.
Right.
It's not like Singapore. Singapore, you cannot, from industry, cannot change to residential. But in some other parts of the world, it's easier to do that conversion.
Right.
Yeah, to provide a housing solution.
Right. So back to 2019, you were that time your social experiment happened to be the sixth sort of company.
Number six brand.
Start. Okay, and what happened next? What happened with your social experiment?
So during the social experiment, at that point in time, the client said, hey, so what you want to do? I said, I want to do co-living. Then he said, what is co-living? I remember, what is co-living? I said, Park, you just, just room renter. I remember telling him that you just do, because it's very hard for him to explain. Because co-living in 2019, there's not much of a fanfare. Not much. So he said, okay, I rent to you. I said, can you give me a discount? I said, okay, $5,005. What I rent from him, I spent around $20,000 of my money to go and fit up the place.
Okay.
So 2 weeks later, the place was fitted up. Another 2 weeks later, I got some of my agent friend to help me to rent it out. So within 2 weeks, I rent out all the room. Then in total, my rental collection was $10,800. So at that point in time, my thinking was that if my client can use this concept to turn around the space, they can achieve a higher rental yield. Because I'm a real estate guy. To me, numbers for real estate is very important. Then at the same time, I said, hey, that's really demand because you have a very safe environment. Then, of course, matching of the tenant is important.
Yeah.
I remember my first six tenant, right, are all ladies.
So how many rooms were there in this terrace house?
Okay, there was already six rooms already.
Right.
There was already six rooms because two and a half story. So first floor, you got one granny room. Mm. Then on top, two room. Then one
big room. Do you happen to remember like roughly the rental rates back then in 2019 of this?
Oh, I remember my master room, I was renting at around 2002.
Right. And it was in Orchard Paragon.
Orchard Paragon.
It was like super cheap back then.
At that point in time, I remember it was still higher than the so-called cookie cutter room renter that's in the market.
Mm.
So I remember when tenant come and ask me, hey, why are you charging me more expensive? So we said, oh, we are hosting a monthly event for you.
Mm.
Then I remember my first 50 rooms, every week, every Thursday, we send breakfast for them.
Wow.
Mm.
We send a local kaya toast for them to let them really experience the Singapore thing. At that point in time, 20 rooms, it's very hard to do any community event. It's only when we're 1,200 rooms, then our community event is more robust. So whatever we have done then and now is actually very different. Right. So it was started purely from social experiment point of view. Because at that point in time, I was still holding a full-time job with Oxley. So this one was really more of a social experiment. So one thing lead to another. Then that year itself, I think I end the year with around 70, 80 rooms.
So 2019, while you were still working at Oxley, at the end of the year, you had 70 rooms. And around that was 70. Like how many units? Was it like 15 apartments?
Okay, so it was quite different. Just now, before we came on this show, Grace was asking me whether the COVID hit me. Because I started a company in 2019, somewhere operation in June. 8 months later, you know, you
have circuit breaker,
everything, right? Mm. So I was very fortunate because after this Jalan Elok Inter Terrace, right? The rest of the property I did, right, was actually via management contract.
Mm.
So I was sharing this idea with some of my clients, my very close group investor, whose family owned a lot of real estate. Mm. So I shared with them about the concept. Then I was really very blessed, I was very fortunate. And then one of them say, hey, Eugene, so happened I got this building. You know, all this building, I last time always ask people to help me rent out unit by unit. But I think it's time to uplift this place.
Mm.
I tell you what, maybe you help me check how much should I spend to renovate the whole place. Mm. And you do your numbers. If I go by this model, right, can I have a higher you? Mm. So I say, I can do for you, but I got no money to pay you renter. So can we go by a management contract model?
Mm.
So my first 300 room were all via management contract. It was only the first property that I pay renter. The rest I didn't pay renter. Mm. So I actually take a cut from the revenue.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So it's purely by profit share. So
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that
so you become like an operator.
Operator.
To kickstart this thing for your client. The correct. 300 units.
The first 300 rooms.
Right. Are these 300 rooms still in the assembly place under management?
Yes.
Right, awesome. So that kickstarted your journey into...
Correct.
Right. Was that during the COVID season?
So what happened was that 2019, we managed to secure some relatively bigger project towards the end of 2019.
Mm.
Then January of 2020, the year when COVID happened, I secured the largest asset, which is Mill at 32. That one is 158 room. Mm.
Okay.
We secured that project. We renovate during the first month. It's management contract. Then COVID hit. Then renovation got resumed again somewhere in August that year.
Right.
So by September, we managed to live that asset.
Mm. Mm.
So yeah.
Great.
So under the management contract, in short, all the renovation costs are borne by the owner.
Yes, it's all borne by the owner.
But you will do like a proposal.
We'll do like a proposal. So what happened is that the first 300 room, as a startup, we are very clear that cash is very important.
Mm.
You know, a lot of startup, you heard about this burn and crash. Mm. You know, how many runway you have when you raise money, you know, how much your cash can last you.
Mm.
So when I first started this business, my mentality was very different. Unlike the other co-living operator who go to the market to raise money from venture capitalists, institutional fund, my first 2 years, I keep remind myself that it has to be an asset-like strategy.
Mm. Mm.
So I remember that during the second year, actually for the past few years, we have been profitable.
Mm.
So we have not lost a single cent, you know, during the past few years as a startup. So we're very clear that first 300 rooms, we need to be asset-like.
Right.
And every month, you need to be cash flow positive. So that helped us to survive COVID. Because COVID, when the room, you know, when the room don't lease out, you also do not take a hit on the renter.
Mm. Yeah. Right. Thanks for sharing, how you kickstarted this whole journey. Maybe let's come to this three parts that I think a lot of people are very curious about in terms of the co-living space. So co-living, I think what is very interesting is that there are three different audiences. First one is, of course, tenants will be asking, what is the benefit to me as a tenant to rent from a co-living operator, right? Secondly is that the landlord will also be very curious, like, what is the benefit to me as a landlord owning my investment properties for renting to a co-living operator comparing to me renting out myself? Now, of course, the third point of view is, as an operator, how do you, you know, structure the business so that it makes sense for you as well, as an operator, as a company? So maybe we can kickstart from the tenant's point of view, because I think a lot of tenants, some tenants, they have not experienced living in a co-living space. They might have some questions, or they might have certain fears, or maybe, I would say, market myths that they would like to ask about. So maybe from the tenant's point of view, why is it that over the past few years, there was an explosion of co-living spaces and the take-up rate by tenants was so high? What actually draws them, other than the community aspect that you were talking about, other than the part that they don't have to live with landlord? And what other key benefits are there to a tenant's point of view?
Okay, so we start from the tenant point of view. Yeah. What is the benefit of staying in a co-living space versus a traditional rental unit? Mm. So first of all, I must caveat that co-living space is not for anyone.
Mm.
Yeah, today a family with three kids, you want the whole unit to yourself. So let's start off with the target audience, the profile of the tenant.
Mm.
So the profile of the tenant are usually the younger crowd. Yeah, seated on your left and seated on my right. Both of them are our target audience. So, of course, you got Singapore.
Any more rooms for us to select later?
I'll give you a very good price.
Oh, thank you very much.
So, the profile is, 62% of our member are 30 years old and below.
Mm.
So, with that, you can see that it's really for someone who is younger. So, what's the benefit? Firstly, the younger generation, I think the thinking is very different now.
Mm.
Today, if you are 25, 26 years old, you are from overseas coming to Singapore to work. You are in a foreign land, you don't have friends. Stay in a studio apartment alone by yourself, firstly, probably it'll be a bit more expensive. So at 25, 26 years old, you're just starting out. Probably your budget for accommodation is not that high. So you need to go for a lower budget, like a traditional room renter, which is happening even before the existence of co-living. So people pay $800, $1,000 room. But you've got this emergence of the younger, more educated generation, 26, 27 years old, probably in the finance department, finance field, or the technology field, they come over to Singapore. It's an experience for them, the younger people. You know, now they are so used to TikTok, Instagram, social media. So to them, they come to Singapore, I want to meet people.
Mm.
I want to meet new friends. I want to make my next 1 year, 2 years in Singapore count.
Would you say your tenant pool is largely, you know, people who are working, they are from overseas and they come to Singapore? Or do you also have a mix of people who are, you know, born and raised in Singapore, but also looking at co-living options?
Yes, we do have. But 85% of our tenant are still expat.
I see.
Are foreigners working in Singapore. And we still got around 15%. The younger Singaporean who actually, example, if you're 26 years old this year, 28 years old this year, you're still staying with your parents and don't want to get married and find that there's no need to find a lifetime partner. They want to live their life on their own, but they do not want to stay with their parents. They want their own space. But yet, budget is always a constraint.
Mm.
So,
did this percentage increase during COVID?
Yes, it did.
Right. You noticed the data increase?
Increased tremendously during COVID. Because you realize that the circuit breaker at that point in time was 2 months.
Yeah.
But the work from home culture stayed on for many, many months.
Yeah.
If you remember in 2020, there was some circular by big organization say that by default, we will work from home all the way towards the whole of 2020. If you remember back then. So as a Singaporean, 26, 27 years old, the very high chances is that maybe you have a sibling in university. Your parents are also still working and you got a helper. Imagine 5 person cramp up in a unit. Well, that's when conflict happened. Sure happened because frustrated. You Zoom, you talk too loud.
Yeah.
The other person say, can you keep quiet? Then Wi-Fi not powerful enough. Then everybody crop in the room. So tension, there's a lot of frustration. So we got a lot of inquiry from Singaporeans say that, wow, co-living. I won. And why co-living is better? Because today, as a traditional landlord, if someone want to rent from you for 3 months, you will say no. 6 months, you will say no. But over here, is we can accept 3 months, 6 months.
What's the minimum?
Minimum three months.
Right. And in terms of infrastructure, like what do you provide for your
So
tenants?
We provide is fully furnished. Wi-Fi and utility. So for them, the younger generation, they're happy because these are things like applying for Singapore Power, everything. Singapore Bill, everything is the parents' job. It's not their job.
Is there a cap on monthly utility?
$100 per room per month.
That's the cap?
That's the cap.
Right. Okay, so they only pay $100 additional?
No, it's all included in the rent.
Okay, but anything exceeding $100?
Then we have to charge it back to them.
Oh, I see, I see.
Correct. So do you actually have a limit to the number of pax that can stay in a room? One per room or okay, like master, so, you can have two?
Okay, so for us, the guideline is that a unit itself, no more than 6%. That's the URA guideline. But our SOP is always, master room, we can accommodate a couple. But the rest of the common room, only 1%. Typically, our profile are single. Right. Or even if they're attached, you know, their boyfriend and girlfriend, they don't stay together.
Right. How about like services like cleaning services?
Yes, we do once laundry. A week cleaning. Laundry, no, but we do once a week cleaning. And we also partner with some of the laundry company. It's quite interesting. Today, if you want laundry services, we tie up with, our partner is Love for Laundry. So today, you can always tie up with them through us. Every once a week, you will hang your degree for a Decathlon duffel bag. You just shove everything inside. Next day, they come and pick up. 1 week later, they will press. They will do it for you. And it's only based on the subscription model, I think less than $100 a month.
Right.
Yeah, so we have convenient. That kind of tie up. Yeah.
Right. It's really providing a lot of convenience to the tenants, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so we're still at the tenants' so-called like audience space. And maybe I think a lot of tenants will also be asking like, what if there are like conflicts within same apartment with other tenants, right? Like how do you all help to resolve this?
So my company, we got 5 community managers. So the role of the community manager is not just to lead, show the room, list the room, but it's really build a community. So we do have conflict. Yeah, 1,200 room, 5 room, small problem. 1,200 room, it can be a lot of problem. So first of all, the matching of the tenant is very critical. It's about preference. So a lot of conflict happen is because of preference, not because I don't like you. So example today, if I'm a vegan, if I'm a vegan,
right?
But if I got a tenant, I got a housemate that every day stir fried beef, do pork luck, well, you will sure go crazy. That's when conflict happen. Conflict happen. So we always ask a few questions. Right. All these are done manually. So we ask we ask the tenant, example Grace, we ask Grace, hey, so Grace, we got a form for you to fill. So what's your hobby? Or do you like yoga?
Okay.
What is your preference? Are you a pet lover? But today, if you are so afraid of dogs, but if today your housemate start bringing animals,
so do you allow pets?
Most of our assets are pet friendly.
Right. And I presume you have like a probably like a CRM that you key in all these like preferences and all
in
the database.
So what we did was that if you see our website is a live website. So actually we have a tech team. So we code our CRM, we code our mobile app. So everything is code. It's all built in.
So right. Has, you know, this system of matching tenants helped your tenants find love in your co-living spaces?
Oh, I remember there was one particular unit. Think they end up together. So we are also very happy.
From the common room shift to the master room.
I think preferences, are not so sometimes they're not so obvious, like dietary or hobbies or whatever. It's also about like their desire for social interactions. There could be differing levels, right?
Correct.
And let's say in a co-living space, perhaps some people do not want that much interaction. They are more private. So how do you balance privacy and interaction in co-living spaces? Because at the end of the day, it's still a home, right? You still want to go back and you still want to have that safe sanctuary where you can, you know, rest at home. So how do you balance like communal activities? And I'm sure they're optional, but how do you manage encouraging communal activity with respecting private boundaries in a co-living space?
Yeah, and adding on to that, like the communal living part, what if like somebody decides that, I cook already, but I don't want to wash up and things like that. Who do they go to? Like, do they solve it within themselves or do they come to the community manager, and how do you resolve all these kind of conflicts?
Okay, so first thing is conflict, right? So when we ask ourselves, so what is conflict? What is the reason why there's a conflict? I mean, Grace put out a good point. I want privacy. I don't mind mingling with y'all, but I still want my privacy. So the hardware, the infrastructure of building the space is very critical. So our SOP is that all rooms need to have a study table. Mm. Because conflict happen in the communal area at close proximity.
Yeah.
If today I'm working, then you hear you're talking very loud, you're cooking, you're eating, then that's when, you know, I'm working, can you don't disturb me.
Right, the study table is right here.
Yeah, study table, yeah.
Okay, so building the infrastructure to encourage both communal and private.
Yes, private is very important.
Okay, living, and then?
Then also, that's one thing. Then second thing is, of course, you should have conflict. In fact, one of the conflict which we think that, hey, y'all can resolve among your own.
Yeah.
Things like people complain, hey, this housemate talk very loud. We really got these issues. So what we do is that actually it's about communication. So our committee manager will actually, if things get out of hand, right, we bring both of them together and we talk it
mediation.
Out.
Mediation.
Really, we really mediate.
Oh my god! No, but so
really,
so
really mediate.
Can I ask, like, every week, do you meet your team like on a Sunday, right? Then you sit there. You're like the CSM of the army and that. Then all your five community managers bring out all the case to you.
Oh,
they're like,
that is
how do we solve it? Like this week we got 300 conflict issues to solve. Like, how do you solve it?
So that's the job of my GM. Okay. So my GM have got a once every Wednesday meeting.
Oh my god, this is yeah. Cool. Okay.
Yeah. So the Wednesday meeting is about sharing on the revenue. You say which room is vacant, you know, how can we improve? Okay. Secondly, of course, is you know, tenants complain, management. So they will solve it within their level. Until things cannot be resolved, then you escalate to my level.
Right.
So, so the good thing is that running the business for 3 over years, the conflict side can be resolved.
Mm. Right.
I think that's why having like this middle level is so important. So for a lot of landlords, even though they are, you know, expectant of a high revenue, you know, they know that if I do co-living, I can get a higher income in rental income than if I were to rent out, right? But they still choose not to do it because of this conflict management part that is just so tiring and energy, you know, draining.
Yeah, I mean, recently I also read news, you know, some article that say that hey, individual landlord, you should try to go into co-living space. Yeah. It can increase your yield. Some landlord try it. In fact, we do have some landlord that wrote into us and say that hey, Eugene, can you take over this from me? Because I realized that if today I can rent out a unit, a whole unit at $6,000, if I have a lot, I rent up by rooms, potentially I can rent to 7,005. Mm. But the landlord must remember that there's no such thing as 100% occupancy.
Right.
There's downtime. And when you are ready, so what the typical traditional landlord, what they are doing is just based on room renter. But today, if you only got 6 rooms, 10 rooms, how can you do an effective community event? How can you have economy of scale? Because it's a lot of nitty-gritty.
Yep.
Housekeeping. Who are you going to engage? You cannot be hiring one full-time housekeeper just to manage one or two units.
It it's a whole business by itself.
Yeah, it's a whole business. It doesn't make sense. So we got a lot of inquiry from a landlord that come to us and say that, Eugene, we tried doing it. Cannot. I think, why not I rent everything to you? I'm happy with my 6,000.
Right.
But I'm happy with it. I don't have to be bothered with the nitty-gritty things in life.
Right.
Unless today, as an individual landlord, you got a portfolio of 20, 30 units. By all means, go. Maybe you can have but you need to have a team set.
Can I wrap it up to say that, I mean, for the assembly place, do you allow your tenants to change rooms and change locations if, let's say, the conflict really cannot
be set? We do allow. Sometimes we do allow.
Great. So for that tenants portion, more or less, I think we're quite clear like how it's functioning based on your current brand. Then just now Grace asked you a question about the landlord portion, which I think the key benefit to landlord is that you really take over the kind of trouble that a singular landlord will have if they were to do co-living themselves. Maybe elaborate a little bit more about your past 3 years experience. Like, who are really this category of landlord that really like to pass on their units to co-living operators?
Okay, we got a lot of assets. Okay, unlike a lot of other co-living operators who just take one condo unit, lease, and sublease kind of model, we got, out of the 110 location, we got around 35 location. It's either a singular building block or a row of shop house or a row of landed property. All these are owned by investment company. So investment company like to work with us, real estate investment company, family offices.
Right.
Because a lot of family offices, investment company, holding company, they may be in other trade. Their core business is not in F&B. But you know, all Singapore tauke always like to buy real estate. So when they buy real estate already, buying is one part of the one part of the work, right? The second part is that who can help me to manage it.
Right.
So that's when they look to the SMB place to help them to manage. Because other than just, it's a whole ecosystem. Because my company, back to Grace's question, just a bit on the business, we got 35 of us in my whole company. We have our own development and project team. We have our own in-house architect, ID, project manager, site coordinator, draftsman, everything. Because today, a whole building, the family office say, I want to do it, become a co-living. Management contract, I pay the capex. But who is going to do the drawings?
Right.
Who is going to do the submission to the authority? So they look to us. So we settle everything for them.
Right.
Right to the point of MingCon, calling for MingCon for tender. So to us, they look to us, not just as a leasing company provider. Because that one, you can work with anyone. Any salesperson can lease the place. But to us, even before that happened, our project team and development team already go into it. In fact, we got an investment team. Investment team is actually overseen by me. So we got some investment company that say that, Eugene, what do you think of this asset? Then we underwrite the asset sometimes. And we look at the waterfall chart. My CFO, she's very experienced in churning waterfall chart. We look at the business. We look at the investment point of view. We say, I think you can go in at this price. Let's target 3 years to 5 years we exit. And this is the expected yield you can take. So we have a lot of other things, moving parts. The leasing portion, the community part, is actually at the tail end part.
Right.
Yeah.
So out of your portfolio, how many percent are singular landlords and how many percent are actually like investment?
Around 50-50. Currently it's 50.
So there are like 50% of these 1,200 rooms that belong, the units belong to single landlords.
Single landlords.
Okay. Maybe you're wrong from your point of view. If you are a landlord, with you have one primary residence and then let's say you have another additional property for rental, would you prefer to let a realtor rent out and manage for you, or do you think in this current day and age it makes sense to pass the unit to a co-living operator? And of course, before you answer that question, can I also ask, like, in terms of, from a landlord's point of view, in terms of the market rental rate, would they be able to fetch a fair market rental rate renting to a co-living operator or finding their old tenants themselves?
Okay, just to backtrack a bit, the singular unit, single unit from a single landlord, right? We work very closely with the agents. In fact, we always tell the salesperson, you got listing, you cannot rent out, you pass to me.
Right.
Yeah, so actually for us, the single landlord, we don't really have the kind of direct access to them.
So we don't deal directly to the owner.
So you're dealing with realtors actually. So you're actually offering a solution to realtors, helping that realtors are helping their landlord.
Correct. Right. So example, this one is a very interesting story. I got a lot of my salesperson friend who come to me for Save Our Ship on SOS. I got one of them call me almost in the verge of tears. He said, brother, you got to help me. I said, what happened? I got this unit, the tenant trash up the place. Oh, no. I said, how bad can it be? I look at it. To her, he said, what really trash up? But to me, I can be resolved. He said, how? My client in Taiwan, how am I going to answer? The security deposit also cannot cover. Then how am I going to find handyman, fix this, fix that? I said, never mind. You rent to me. You pass the whole unit to me. And for us, we pay market renter. And today, for the landlord, you pass to me, I uplift the asset for you. Look at the left-hand side. That is Jalan Elok, the one I'm talking about.
The first one.
The first one. Right. That unit was pretty trashed up. So that's how we turn around the asset.
Right.
You mentioned you invested 20,000, right? Initial capital to dress up the place. So what were the works that you...
Internal paintwork.
Okay.
Internal paintwork and ready furnishing. Nice coat of paint, artwork. Nice furnitures.
Right.
But some of the asset was really very trash, like carpentry falling apart, counter, you know, some of the kitchen can rot until don't know what. So we also replace. So to to the landlord. Salesperson, right? Mm. You know that the place can have effective renter when it's nicely done up.
Mm. Mm.
But today, if the listing is a bad listing, the first two lay already koya already, right?
Mm.
You do soft finishing makeover also not much of a use. Especially renter unit.
Right. So you're also like offering a solution to realtors that have long-term landlords.
Correct.
And they want to help their landlords. So especially if their landlords are overseas investors, this is actually the added avenue that realtors can pass the units to you.
Yes. One, and also think to the landlord is that I'm using my money to renovate for you.
Mm.
You get a brand new kitchen set.
Right. Mm. Later we'll come to your investment and sunk costs and how do you make sense of the margins and all that. Okay. So Yurong, if let's say you own an additional investment property.
Yep.
What do you think are the pros and cons of doing it yourself through a realtor or doing it through a co-living operator?
Okay,
from a landlord's point of view.
Okay, so from a landlord's point of view, I think number one is if the co-living operator that we are talking about is of the skill and expertise of the Zambi place, then I would feel very comfortable to actually, you know, let them manage my asset for me, right? Because of all the economics of skill, the experience and all that. But also in the market, you want to understand that there are a lot of very, very small individual co-living operators, like just individual people trying to make this as a business. So basically, they do the rent-to-rent model. So for maybe like to this kind of operators, then maybe I will be a little bit more concerned, you know, to rent it out to them because I'm not sure the expertise. How are they going to handle the tenant profile? Are they going to make sure that their proper due diligence works when they are doing all the room renters? If they're going to renovate, am I going to get back a place that is actually better off or worse off? Because actually, it really depends on like how strong the financial model is. Because in a sense, I will only hold on to maybe like a 2 years. 2 months or 3 months of like deposit, and I want to make sure that if there are any downside, it does not exceed the deposit that I'm holding. So I think in terms of selection, it's very important.
Right. How about Grace? If let's say you were to be a landlord, what are your key concerns about considering to rent out to a co-living operator?
I think I share Yurong's view. The co-living operator has to be reliable because at the end of the day, this is an asset, right, that I'm holding. My main focus will actually, if it's a pure investment asset, is how much I can make out of it. So in the time that I'm holding it, of course, the capital appreciation is one, but I also want max rental yield the time that I'm holding it, right? But it's not just about, you know, which co-living operator can give me the best rental price. It's which co-living operator can give me the peace of mind, right? As I'm renting out this home, I want to know that whoever I've engaged is someone that I can trust. Trust not only to take care of the house in terms of its hardware, but also, like I think Eugene mentioned, the heart. Where, right? The soul of the place, meaning that the people have to get along, you know, the tenants have to be qualified and they have to be, not say that we have to screen their profiles and all that, but make sure that they're people who genuinely need a space and will take care of my home as well.
Right. Yeah. So Grace, if you were to be a landlord today, will you attempt doing co-living yourself as a landlord cum operator?
Personally, I would not, because there is a lot of time, I think, that needs to be invested in it. And if I only have one property, it might not make sense, because then the person that I engage, I cannot, let's say if I get a housekeeper, I have to pay the traditional rate of per hourly. But if I were to have many, many different units, then I can engage as a full-timer and it will make more sense in terms of investment to manpower-wise. Yeah, personally, I feel that I don't have time to manage conflict. I don't have time to take care of the people who are staying there.
It's the whole business by itself, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And okay, everyone coming to you. Just now you have a question about partition, which I think that a lot of landlords also have the same question, is that if I'm a landlord today, I have, let's say, a 3-bedder in an older development. The hall is huge. When I rent to a co-living operator, does it mean that the co-living operator will fix up a partition in the living room? And am I going to get back a place that is like, you know, I have to do reinstatement myself and all that? Was that a question that was in your mind, Ryong, just now you were asking me?
Nice. I wanted to just check in with Eugene on his business model. And then you say, just leave it to the show.
Okay. Let's answer this question. Like, will co-living operators create more rooms in the unit?
Okay, so this is a very, very good question. So a lot of landlords will ask me, Eugene, are you going to partition a lot of room? So the question is yes and no. So I think in our 1,200 over rooms, if I don't remember wrongly, I think probably around 10, slightly more than 10, less than 20 is newly created partition room. When you want to create the newly partitioned room, right, it will only happen for the very old project when the units are big. Example, today a 3-bedroom is 1,800 square feet. Your living room is a 5-meter wide. So you can craft out additional 2.4 to 2.6 meter to have another room. You still got a very good 3-over-meter living room. That we will do. But to if today the unit, the living room is a 3-bedroom, but the living room is only 2.8, and you craft out that whole living room to become a room, that is not right. Because under BCA regulation is very clear. Living room need to be naturally ventilated. So we are also know our real estate to know that there's a limit that you can do. And for us, as we grow the business, we always position ourselves as a premium co-living operator. Because our profile of tenant is very different. When they come in, you look at left and right, how come is where is the living room? How come it's all partitioned? That is not the kind of profile that we're attracting. Unless the unit is really, really big enough.
Right. So like in the market, there is more and more individual people who are running this co-living business, right? So they actually do the entire partition for the entire living room to add an additional room. So that's how they create the additional renter to bump up the yield. But like, I think like what Eugene mentioned, so in terms of the experience wise, it's not good, like, because you're in the, if you're in the common space, the living dining area, you don't get any natural lighting. So that's that's like point one.
Right.
Yeah. But then I'm very curious that if you don't do this additional partition, right? So how do you
derive
enough margin? We'll leave it on the segment last part, three.
Which I think they're all very excited about how you run your business. Because I think secretly they want to run their own business or something.
I mean, I run it before, right? So I mean, I got one question, right? So just like when you mentioned in terms of your search of your tenant profile, right? Do most of the tenants reach out to you, right, before they even arrive in Singapore?
Oh yes, we have.
What's the percentage wise already in Singapore?
I think
and
probably
before?
Around 30%. So they will write in to us. Then we will pass it on to the community manager.
Sure.
Then there's a lot of we send them our video you all have the video tour. We also got the video tour sent to them. So give them the assurance. Then they normally will sign before they come in. Because a lot of them, they want to have certainty. I cannot be coming to Singapore.
Rent a hotel.
Yeah. Unless today you are an expat family. You're on the C-suite level. You know, you come to Singapore, you stay for 1 week, service apartment first, because company can pay. Company can pay 7,000, 8,000, 10,000 for a month. Then that 1 week, then 2 weeks, you go and hunt for accommodation with your family. But the younger crowd, you come here, you expect to find your own accommodation. And for them to spend $200-$300 per room in a hotel, I think is it's not practical for them.
Let me just wrap up the landlord portion. So to summarize from a landlord's point of view, I think one final question a lot of landlord might have is that, what is the minimum contract period to sign with a co-living operator? Let's say, for example, Assembly Place. What is the minimum if I'm a landlord?
Minimum will be 3 years.
3 years, okay.
But we always prefer a 5 years lease.
Right. And then secondly is that, what are some of the things that will assure the landlord when they get back to place after 3 years? Like, will it be reinstated back to the original condition and stuff like that?
Yes. Okay. So our lease agreement is no different from a typical straight lease agreement like the salesperson has done. So the reinstatement clause. The only good thing about the landlord is that a lot of the, we don't have this minor repair cost.
So you remove that clause?
I remove that clause because anything is on me.
Right.
So the landlord also very happy. So example, today, this thing got choked, that thing got choked. Because we got a team of 4 handymen full time. So we do ourselves rather than, in the earlier part of the business, we, because most of the individual unit is the agent, they pass it to me. But they use the standard template of $200 minor repair cost.
Explain to our audience, what is the minor repair clause for?
Okay, so generally when you are renting out a place, so a minor repair clause is to make sure that you have a balancing point with the tenant that, number one, if there are damages or if anything that needs repair work, anything, let's say below the minor repair clause, number $200, the tenant will fix it on their own. So it doesn't bother the landlord on the, like a day-to-day small little item. But if anything exceeds the minor repair clause, then of course you need to consult with the landlord on what are the works required so that the landlord can have a final decision, because any number $200 will actually be payable by the landlord itself, and they will usually like to have the decision to choose who they want to engage to fix up the problem, and they want to know like the cost before they actually, you know, like start engaging the works as well.
Yeah, so add on to that, there are two varying versions. Sometimes the most common version is that, for example, if the minor repair clause is $200 per item per repair, it means that, for example, this door handle spoil or this door lock spoil,
$180, then the tenant will have to fix the full sum themselves. If it's, let's say, $250, first $200 is under tenant, $50 is under landlord. There's also varying minor repair clause based on both parties' agreement is that maybe if it exceeds a certain portion, the entire sum is under the landlord. So, Eugene, just want to mention a second thing that you also remove from the standard contract. What is the second thing? Was it the aircon or things like that?
Okay, so aircon, definitely we will always have the service agreement. So just now I was saying that our first part of the, when we start going to the straight lease model, the agent, they use their template, right? Got this $200 minor repair cost. So we go by contract. Then realize actually, well, end up these things spoil. Example, water heater. I call the salesperson, but you must understand the salesperson role is not a handyman role. Yeah. You call them, also, they also have to go and Google to find who are the effective.
Yeah.
After that, they call the landlord. Owner. The landlord, the owner is also not the professional handyman. Mm. Then we realize that, we settle ourselves. So in the end, we realize as we scale the business, we got own handyman, we fix ourselves. It's easier than I go to the salesperson. So the salesperson, they're very happy working with us because they say, well, Eugene, you're the only one. I pass to you, you don't need to come and disturb me. Right. And to the landlord, I think landlord, they are reasonable people. Of course, they want to increase rent, but they also ask themselves that, actually, this tenant never disturbed me.
Yeah.
For 3 years.
For 3 years.
Yeah.
And actually, over the course of 3 years, there was time I changed aircon for them.
Yeah.
Mm. I changed one unit for them.
At their own cost.
At our own cost.
Wow.
We changed for them.
Because usually repair and landlord replacement. Yeah. I mean, sorry, aircon replacement and aircon repair is under the landlord's.
So sometimes we will just change on our own. I told my guests how much. And our cost is definitely much cheaper than the landlord. Because we got so many rooms. We got so many contact. So we call our aircon contractor. Today, you'll be amazed by how much I can get the aircon unit. So the landlord, they also happy. They say that, wow, you changed the whole thing for me.
Yeah.
But you did inform, also do inform the owner.
We do inform them. Right. So all these things we do out of goodwill is to also to build a relationship. Mm. So when the lease end, they also know that, okay lah.
They might renew.
Yeah. They'll renew, then they don't have to, you know.
So I think the two major differences in terms of contract, let's say with the assembly place, possibly will be two things. Number one, owner will allow you to do minor alteration to the place, like renovation clause, which usually is not allowed in a normal contract. And second thing will be to allow like the subletting in that sense. Sure. The subletting clause will be removed.
So because we got very minimum unit that we do partition, but in fact, before we do any partition work, we draw it out on black and white and we show it to the landlord.
Yeah.
Because you cannot do it ugly. Yeah. So when we show them the before and after photo, they were also quite happy. Then sometimes they will say that, well, maybe after the lease end, you want me to remove? Maybe they don't want me to remove also.
Yeah. Mm.
They can keep it down there. Then they can rent it out as a 4-bedroom unit.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. Great. Okay, so let's wrap up the landlord portion. We talked about the tenant's point of view. We talked about the landlord's point of view. Now let's move on to the final segment, which I think they're all very excited about, is the operator's point of view. That means as a business owner, there's a lot of questions like, how does it make sense for this co-living business to function? Of course, one aspect based on what we've heard so far is economies of scale. That means when you have more rooms, all your functions of the business, handyman, cleaning, repair, aircon repair, and of course, like handling different tenants, screening your tenants, all this comes at scale. You have that kind of savings in terms of this skill level. But I think maybe from the first contact point, I'll start off the question first, then I'll pass on to Grace and Yurong, is that as a business owner, how do you first decide when you look at this unit from the first 5 minutes, you look at this particular unit and this landlord comes to you and say that, hey, Eugene, I'm going overseas. I want to rent to you for 3 years. I want to rent at this amount. How do you make sense of the numbers looking at, for example, this is a 3-bedder, 1,200 square feet in a condominium with facilities beside MRT station. How do you decide, okay, this rent is my max threshold. Above a threshold, I cannot take anymore because it doesn't make sense for me as a business. How do you ascertain that as a business owner?
Okay, two front. The first thing is location first.
Mm.
So example, there are certain location that we decided, you know, as a company, we don't really want to go into. It's because...
Which are the locations?
There are people...
So you have your own moat analysis.
Yes. Yeah. Because there are some location, example, Bukit Batok and Choa Chu Kang, we never take. Not because we don't want to take, but unless it's a building block on its own. But today, if we got some agent friend come and ask me, hey, brother, I got this in Choa Chu Kang, you want to take? No? I say, I can't because I don't have any
the operation existing
existing in that area. Then I have to deploy all my resources there for 1 3-bedroom unit. Then it doesn't make sense. Yeah. So, so location is one thing.
Right.
Second thing, we also begin to appreciate that that part, you know, that area, I don't think my tenant will want to stay in that area.
Okay. Yeah. What are the hottest area that instantly you know that the tenant demand is already in existence one?
Okay, we are very strong in the city fringe area. Like Jalan Besar. Jalan Besar is our stronghold. Today you go to Jalan Besar, you turn every corner from Perak Road to Virasami, you can see all our buildings there.
Right.
Mayo Street, Jalan Besar. We are very strong there. We are very strong in Owen Road, Farrer Park area, Farrer Park MRT. Because that locale itself is really at the very near to the city centre. That kind of location we like. Because all this, a lot of all these assets are very undervalued. Very, very undervalued. It's at the doorstep, but it's not inside. You know? So, and for the aspect, they say you do it up nicely. Hey, I'm very near. I'm very near to the city centre, but yet I don't have to pay city centre rental. Yeah, so,
so
like
for this
area,
the speed of having tenants taking out the place, the vacancy rate is very low for you guys.
Our occupancy rate generally, month on month, is around 95%.
Right.
Yeah, we have never fallen below 90. The worst was 92, 93, but we're always 95.
Right. Okay, so back to the question. Like how, I mean, other than location, other than you favouring city fringe area, from... I mean, like immediate 5-second analysis, right? I mean, or 5 minutes analysis. How do you make sense of the numbers as an expert point of view?
Okay, so what we look at is how many bedroom and what is the asking price? And what is the size? These three questions we more or less know. So, example, today the super high end, we got agent that asked me, Eugene Sentosa, you want or not?
No.
We say, no. I say, your Sentosa bungalow... You don't rent to me. You rent out on its own. You fetch more value than me because there's no way I can rent a room for $4,000. Make sense? No way. So the maximum, the highest renter I charge for a big room with attached bath is $3,500. I don't think I've hit anything cross $3,500. Because
even $3,500 is actually
very
really premium.
High. It's very premium. It's at Bukit Timah. But you hit anything above $3,500, the tenant will also think.
Service apartment.
Yeah, I go service apartment. Or maybe I go and get the studio.
The whole unit.
The whole unit on my own.
Yeah.
Right.
So our target audience is always that $2,000 to $2,500 per month, that kind of range. Yeah, so today, if someone say, I got a 3-bedroom unit, then we'll ask new or old. If it's new homes, no need to. If it's today you got a 3-bedroom, just TOP one, 900 square feet, they will charge me $8,000. No way I can do it. Because my master room, I rent out $2,500. The other two rooms, it's impossible. Then I will tell them politely, I think this one you rent to outside market, 2 years, 3 years, better.
So TOP projects you won't take?
Depends also. We took some, like veranda residences, 4-bedroom. Yeah, those they say they 4-bedroom, that time they want $6,500. Then those you can do.
Okay.
So for us, we as long as a business-wise, because we have that skill, right? As long as we make X number of dollars per room, right? We will take. We don't have to make a lot of money out of a room.
What is your... Would you be okay to share, like, what is your minimum margin in order to make sense? For example, let's say if the landlord wants to rent a 3-bedroom to you at maybe $6,000. What is that margin that you need to have in order for this whole business to make sense? Or, like, you know, if your margin is only, like, X amount... Then you would definitely
okay, minimum we have to have a gross margin of 25% in order to make sense.
The cover costs and everything.
Cover costs. So after you cover costs, the whole business, you cover costs, you reach a certain level. Let's say we have 1,200 room. We always see a skill. We always talk about EBITDA, right? So once you have 1,200 room, you got a 95% occupancy or EBITDA is around 15 to 18. But once you got 1,500 room, then my EBITDA will increase.
Right.
So my gross, I still need to have around 25%. That means minimally 25. But most of the time, we will try to aim for 30 to 32.
Right.
Okay.
From a gross margin point of view.
Right.
Because you need to cover your 35 staff.
35 staff, including my salary.
How much do you pay yourself?
I'm not the highest paying staff. In my company.
Right. Okay. Is MRT a must?
No. Not really.
Okay. Yeah. So what are the key factors from an operator's point of view that increases the speed of your rental? Facilities?
Firstly, not so. In fact, we don't have any whole development, right? We don't have any that have got full facilities one. Mm. The only one you want full facility then will be the single unit. You know, the condo strata. Mm-hmm. Most of it are shop houses. Most of it are singular building block, five-story building block. There's no facility. Mm. So facility was never an objection.
Right.
For me running the business.
Okay. It's mainly the location.
Location.
And of course, the price.
The price. Is location and price very sensitive.
Right. Mm. So, Grace, just now your question. You had a question for Eugene about the operator's point of view.
From the business standpoint, how did you transit from, you know, having like a suite of part-timers and then moving on to establishing yourselves as a full-on operator with your own manpower, that transition, right? And how do you make sense of the numbers in terms of growing the business?
Okay, so there's always a chart. So while I was running the business, I also grew and learned along the way. Mm. So when we only have the first 20, 30 rooms, right? Okay, we engage part-timer.
Mm.
Then when, in fact, my finance team for the first 2.5 years was outsourced.
Mm.
It was only a year ago, I hired my CFO, I had my own in-house finance. So I got 4 of them, my whole finance team. So we reach a point that we have to balance between, look, outsource is always expensive. But you need to reach that certain scale that you hire full-time, then it makes sense.
Mm.
So we always look at the numbers.
Yeah. Right.
So I look at the numbers. As a business owner, you have to understand the numbers.
Correct. Mm. Also, when you have your own in-house staff, there's also more control over the business.
Oh, yes, right? Of course.
In terms of quality, in terms standard. Of longevity also with the certain partners.
Correct.
Yeah.
So from what I hear is you are actually very prudent, especially in terms of cash flow, in terms of numbers. And I think that like, You sort of like hit the threshold first before you hire full time, right? Before you are not doing like the chicken and egg thing, right? So you just hire first and then.
Oh no, we don't.
Okay,
we don't.
Yeah. Understand. And I think a lot of her success is also, really on the business model where the first 300 units you mainly do under the management model. So there is not so much of a costing outlay, especially for the let's say the deposit in terms of your monthly cash flow, you have to pay the rent up front, and it allows more bandwidth in terms of the occupancy, even bandwidth of vacancy if there is any such that you know like you can actually grow to that scale to actually hire it full time. Correct.
So the first 300 room was management contract, so my cost was not high. And when we were having 300 rooms that time, I remember our company when you got 5 staff. You got 5 full-time staff.
Right.
So that was when we realized that we were a bit lucky. So we took on a lot of the straight lease before the rental market went crazy.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So we took on a 3 to 5 years lease. So we were in that sweet spot.
Right.
But we studied about management contract. Of course, management contract, there's literally not much of a risk versus the straight lease model.
Mm.
And I also got the base guarantee rent plus profit share, I also have. I got 3 different models.
Mm.
But the margin is clearly higher, right? On a straight lease model. Management control, your margin is definitely much lower. Mm. But that is based on the environment whereby today's rental market is strong.
Mm. Yes.
So we also tend to be more prudent. We just tell ourselves that, you know, the max we can go is 60%. That's on a straight lease model. I need to have minimum 40% as management contract because we have a matrix.
Right.
What if things turn south?
Yeah.
Are we still have
that? We still have a base.
Mm. Have a very good runway.
Right.
So we are also very mindful of, even a lot of people was very surprised that we got 1,200 room, we got 35 full-time staff. Some of my competitor got 700 room, but they got maybe 80 over staff. For me, we always believe in keeping the team very, very lean.
Right. Eugene, do you mind talking about a little bit about the key players and the competitors in the Singapore market? Like who are the other players in the market?
I think the co-living sector over the past 1 year has reached a point of consolidation.
Mm.
In fact, I go into the straight lease model because I acquired my competitor early last year.
Mm.
So they got around, not big, they got around 100 over rooms. So we acquired them 100%. So that time we acquired them 100%. So really understand the straight lease model and realize that actually if we tweak a bit, put on my usual real estate investment cap.
Right.
Then I realized, hey, you can do this business.
Sorry, just for our audience who are joining us like halfway, can you help us to define what is called the straight lease model?
Straight lease model means I just pay the straight, let's say Grace, you got a 3-bedroom, I just pay
the landlord directly. Deal with the landlord directly. Yes. Right. So like this 100 over rooms you take over is you pay the 100 yes. landlords directly.
Yes, correct.
Separate okay. landlords.
100 rooms probably wow. is no, like, no, you know, like 30 units. 30 units.
So the 30 separate all landlords. Separate. Right.
So they have
right.
do a novation contract where we
wow,
we do the,
from yeah. the existing operator. Correct. Okay. So by and large, are there like 3 big players, including yourself, or 5 big players right now in Singapore in the year 2023?
I think it's around 5 that is quite prominent in the market.
Right. So where do you rank yourself, like in terms of like how do you all rank in this industry? Like, is it based on how many rooms I control?
Actually, it's how many rooms?
Right. So like now on the number 1 to 5 level, where is the Assembly place?
I think we are probably in the number 1 and number 2 is always almost very close together.
Okay.
So we are considered in the number 1 and number
right,
2
awesome.
Range.
Congratulations. Yeah. And of course, share with us a little bit about your expansion into KL and Cambodia. And what was the decision-making process?
Okay, KL was also one of the investment companies. So we know them. They're a real estate company. So they decided to buy a plot of land in Bangsar area. So same thing. They want to turn it around to be a premium 88-room co-living hotel. So then they got us in as an operator.
Right.
Yeah. So for Cambodia itself, it's actually a good friend who actually, he and his group of friends, a company actually built 2 existing hotels, 1 hotel and 1 service apartment in Phnom Penh itself, in Cambodia. So they got another plot of land, master plan, 4 residential block, which they sell to the local. There's 2 block. 1 service apartment managed by Citadine, Ascot.
Mm.
Another block will be managed by the Assembly Place. That will be the
wow.
first purpose-built co-living
wow.
Building in awesome. Phnom Penh.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Actually, yeah. Eugene, I'm very curious, right? So, in terms of building a co-living space, in terms of the entire business model, right? There's, of course, the acquiring of units, the pricing and all that. There's also a very intangible aspect of building a community and a culture, right? This culture can transcend even like geographical regions, which means you bring this Assembly Place culture into KL, you bring this culture and this... you know, this community into Cambodia, right? So first, I just want to say that that's awesome because I think it solves a gap in the market where it assuages a lot of anxiety for working adults nowadays, especially with globalization, with people, you know, crossing into different countries to work. There could be a lot of social anxiety, and I think co-living spaces kind of solve that issue. One thing that I wanted to ask with regard to this is how much of your business success do you attribute to being able to build such a community, and how much do you attribute it to, you know, just being very wise with your numbers and your planning?
Yeah. Okay, I think it works both ways. Being wise with the number give you that head start into the business.
Mm.
So you will not make mistakes unnecessarily. Yeah, you will not go into an unnecessary pitfall. Building that very robust community, credit goes to my team or my GM as well as my committee manager, that ensure sustainability and a high retention rate.
Mm.
Because you do not want to, today I find a very good asset.
Yes.
The first wave, when you launch it, you can have very good occupancy rate.
Yeah.
3 months later, the occupancy rate drop.
Mm.
You know, the sad thing is always when members, when they leave, you know, they leave because they were upset.
Yeah.
Yeah. Versus when they leave, because they are going back to their country.
Mm.
We got some members that go back to their country. You know, we all saw news that, you know, there was a big tech retrenchment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them leave. They go back to their respective country. 2-3 months later, they call us back. Say, I'm coming back. I found a job in Singapore.
Yeah.
I still want to stay in the Assembly Place. So that itself is the best testimony of what we have built.
Mm.
And that itself, a credit goes to my community team. I mean, the 5 of them, amazing. Led by my GM. The team of 6, they manage 1,200 rooms. Right. It's very intensive because you're dealing with not just the hard asset, you're dealing with people. Day in, day out. We all know as business owner, dealing with people is always the hardest part of the business. Yeah.
By the way, Eugene, I remember that time when I was in the office for coffee, you invited me to your new office. It looks awesome. And it's still in the same place, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. You shared that you are also now providing like goodwill service to aspiring operators who want to try out the business of co-living. Like, they want to start off with their first, second unit. You're actually supplying them with your network of like handyman to set up the furnitures at a costing and things like that. For example, let's say you don't want to start a co-living, you want to try one unit, you're actually like as a market expert and a market leader, you're actually giving that goodwill service kind of thing. Is that still in existence?
Okay, so what happened was that there, to be in honesty, there were some my landlord friends who come to me and say, "Hey, Eugene, you are doing well. Hey, I also want to do something. Can I learn?" I mean, we are very open to share. Then I tell them, "Hey, this is what you want to do, you can do. So, but just be mindful that it's not easy." Mm. So we got a lot of all these inquiries. So for me, as a business owner, I always tell myself that how to really scale the business, I need to disrupt myself.
Mm.
So that's when we actually built a platform. We're going to launch it very soon.
Right.
The platform will allow the today, Grace, after this interview, feel very inspired. I want to have the SME Place version 2. I also want to do something like that. You can just go through my platform. You can even use my brand name, coupled with your brand.
It's like a franchise model.
It's like a, something like a franchise model.
Grace Co-Living
Grace
powered
assembly
by
place.
The
Assembly Place. Assembly Place.
Powered by ChatGPT, something like that.
So we already actually at the tail end of the building of this platform.
Right.
Now at the debugging stage.
Right.
Awesome. So next time, if you want, you can go to the platform. And it could be a case whereby your parents say that, well, all of you grew up already, shift out already, I got 3 rooms empty. I mean, it's real life.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real life situation, right? You got a lot of uncle auntie, the kids all grow up. They want to supplement their income. Because Singapore, we are not a welfareism state, you know.
Mm.
So it's like you retire, okay, depend on a bit of your CPF. But then you got 3 rooms empty, very lonely. You say you want to rent out to students, then remind themselves of, my kids were a student. Yeah. Hey, these are real Singaporean issues. So supplement a lot of income. They don't want to burden their children.
Mm.
Parents is like that.
Mm.
But they are very fearful of, well, who I rent out to. Mm. It's not how much you can give me, you know. It's who.
It's
whether we can
home.
Coexist together. So this platform will be able to help them.
Right.
Mm. Awesome. Basically, it's like a form of like matching is one thing.
Yes,
it's matching. And the other thing is also like to actually give that system such that, you know, it's easier for them to, easier for people who are new to actually kickstart.
And and also, it's to help agents.
Mm.
Because this platform, right, because we all know salesperson sometimes are so busy.
Right.
You want to do, unless today a new salesperson, room rental you do. Nowadays, you do room rental. You don't do right because you only got 24 hours a day.
Mm. I stopped doing sales since 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, hand over to my guys.
So some of your top producers may not want to do that.
Yeah.
So a lot of salesperson, they got tenant, a room tenant, they come to me. Say, Eugene, I got this tenant, want to find room rental. Can you help me settle? Because I really got no time.
Yeah.
And because, or you say that, wow, room rental, you know, I put up room rental listing are very expensive. Credit boost very expensive. But the returns just doesn't make sense. So we have this platform to help the agent.
To listen on your platform.
Awesome.
Yeah,
right.
So help to match.
Yeah.
Can I also ask one more question, right? So just now in terms of like, you know, like turnover rate. So because minimum lease is 3 months.
Yes.
Do you actually track, for example, you know, how much percentage of the tenants actually stay for what is the X duration?
Around 6 months. Average.
It's the average.
Average 6 months.
And then they will move on.
They will move on. Some of them move on. Because a lot of them are come here on project basis. They are here in Singapore for 5 months, 6 months. Then they go back. Mm.
Okay.
Some of them
are students. You should come up with a course.
Oh, a course.
How to be a co-living.
Okay, actually, operator. In the market, there are people...
giving out courses.
Wow. But the thing is that they give out courses. they give out courses like this, right?
Okay. Eugene, you're invited to be a speaker at our upcoming property summit.
How to rent out your first 100 rooms in less than 3 months.
I know of three trainers.
Oh my god.
But the thing is that we always want to educate, right? Yeah, maybe we also want to empower people. To uplift their youth. But it's also, we need to also explain to owners that there are some risks that they need to take.
Because end of the day, I mean, if it's just like one or two units, after 3 years, they might just break even or some might even lose money if they don't do it correctly.
Yeah.
And there are causes that, which I think it's not wise to do.
Mm.
Right.
You know, we are all in real estate, right? Mm. So in salesperson, we also encourage people to buy, you know, asset enhancement, increase their value. So, I mean, sometimes we do come up with causes, you know, friends send me say that, hey, there are causes whereby teach you to rent and sub-rent.
Yeah.
Then I was like, okay,
rent to rent, huh?
You rent to rent. That means
straight lease.
That means you rent already. Okay, then you chop a lot of room. Yeah. Then you lease out.
Like trying to be an operator.
Trying to be an operator. Okay. Then that's when you may face some risk.
Mm. Yeah. I think from a landlord's point of view, landlord would need to take note that, of course, this is like a full-blown business by itself. Yeah. If you do it on a 1 to 2 unit basis, you will not enjoy the economies of scale. And end up, after 3 years, you might just be doing a free labor to just manage this entire
thing. The effort is not worth the extra margin.
Basically. Yeah, and you should be focusing on your professional work, right?
Yep.
I think turning this into a business, right, has it also opened up a lot of doors for B2B business? Because I know that like for like co-working spaces, right, there's a lot of opportunities to collaborate with other businesses like coffee places or...
Oh yes, we do. In fact, a lot of our asset located like in shop houses.
You mentioned the laundry.
Yeah, shop houses. Partners. So in TAP, if you go to our website, we partner with 20 over partners. Mm. So today, anyone that's our member, we're gonna mobile, you flash our e-card, right? You can actually go to True Group, True Fitness. The first month, I believe, is 50% discount. Okay. Second month is 20% discount. You go to Tiramisu Hero, I think y'all heard before. You go down there, flash e-card, you got discount. Check in and hide, you go down there, you got discount. Love for Laundry, you got discount.
Right.
Awesome.
Then even to do aesthetic, cut hair, all these also have.
Right.
So I think it's unique also because the tenant pool that you are attracting with the space that you have built is a very different, is a very unique class, and they will need all these, you know, facilities. They will want to go to the gym. They want to use your partner with these businesses. So I believe it has opened up a lot of doors for you as well in terms of a B2B and...
B2B also, because we are Singapore, we are a local startup.
Mm.
And we always, I mean, as a founder myself, starting this company, I also empathize a lot with fellow startup bosses. Mm. Because the journey as an entrepreneur is never easy.
Mm.
So to us, we are, I mean, you know, wearing the hat as running the company, and also as a founder myself, I always empathize with fellow founder.
Mm.
So to me, any...
Collaboration
that's from the local scene, right?
There's this
term, right? Local support local.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we will share support.
Mm. Awesome.
Yeah. It's for like for synergy as well.
For synergy. And we want to see each other succeed.
Definitely.
Awesome.
Yeah, today F&B. I remember there was one F&B operator. Wow, COVID was very bad.
Hmm.
So we actually tell them to come up with QR code. And then we dedicate it to this particular building.
Hmm.
My biggest asset, 150 over room. We blast it to them so that they can order food. So logistic-wise, it's easy. They go to one location. If that lunch, 30% order.
Mm.
Hey, then they go to one location. Then it's a lot of business for them.
Yes. Mm.
Then dinner, 40 sets.
Right.
So we try to help each other. Like, may not make money, but at least they won't they won't lose too much during that 2 months of COVID.
Right. Yeah. Thanks.
I think Eugene is a very hard person. And that's the reason why, you know, like all the connections that you have made has had to stack up to make SMB Play so successful. Because of all the past connections that have been built up as well.
Yes, we are grateful for the fellow investor and partners who trust us.
Right.
Yeah, maybe they will be watching. So must really thank them. Right, without them, we wouldn't make it to more than 1,200 rooms. Yeah.
Right.
And also, of course, our investors as well.
Okay, I need to pick Eugene's brain for the last topic before we end off. Which just now, I think as Grace was talking about your setup in Cambodia. And of course, I think... as a tenant's point of view, especially for somebody that's coming from overseas to Singapore, sometimes I think the feeling of certainty as a tenant is that if I were to look at some of the property portals and I know that I'm renting this room from one of the top 5 co-living operators in Singapore, I'm dealing with a company, there's a legitimate process of rental, I'm dealing with a community manager, it feels more secure compared to maybe dealing with and living together with a landlord that I'm not sure about the living habits. We get into some disputes and can I cook and can I not cook? How many times can I wash my clothes per week? Mm. Can I on the aircon? If I weekend I'm at home the whole day, if I on the aircon the whole day, will the landlord scold me and stuff like that, right? So, and also of course, like, I mean, I've heard stories about like sometimes there's no internet and things like that. So I think that's one of the benefits of renting from a co-living operator. Of course, there are benefits from renting directly from a landlord. It might be slightly cheaper. You know, some landlords are fantastic. There are good relationships that are formed. And we're not like categorizing them, but I think there are pros and cons in both. We need to talk about the rental scams, right? So I don't know whether Yurong and Grace know or not. Like last year.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, this is so crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Crazy.
Let me just bring out what is crazy. I'm going to flash all this
documents and things that are created on George. So last year, one of our, I don't know last year, was it the year before, we received a couple of like phone calls to George phone, one of my top producers.
Okay.
The phone calls is like, I'm here already. Where are you? And George will be like, huh? Sorry, did I make an appointment with you? And then, I thought we promised today will be the handover. I'm already here already at this condo. I'm waiting at the side gate. And Josh will be like, oh, so sorry. I mean, who are you? And have we contacted? Then the person on the line will say, oh, I already paid deposit. I thought that today is the handover. I'm supposed to take the key to the unit. Oh. So there were a lot of impersonation on Josh in the sense that it was a fake number. His CEA card was duplicated. His listings were duplicated. And of course, all this we reported to police. Of course, there were so many police reports that were made. So there was a season, especially, I think it was after the pandemic, that there were a lot of tenants that were scammed. Yeah, and all this, when we contacted the police, this was like done by syndicates. And basically, all this is like, what is that called? A burner phone. This was done through burner phones. Mm. It's untrackable. And of course, that's what gave rise to this, I mean, two articles recently.
I mean,
and
it was so, I'm not laughing. So I'm not laughing at this situation, right? But this just feels very like, you know, 绳之以法. Then yeah. He's like acting out the
crime watch.
Scene.
No, it's very horrific. And of course, yeah. The tenants, they were very traumatized. Mm. Yeah, because
money.
Because they were overseas, they were asked to transfer their deposits. And later as I show you the CA card, you'll be and they even created rental contracts. And everything was like so legit. So if you're a tenant coming to Singapore for the first time, I think you're going to be shocked because you thought that you signed and paid deposits to a landlord, but you end up paying to a syndicate. I mean, what are your thought process about renter scams? I mean, that happened over the last 2 years.
Well, I read a lot. Lucky for us, we never get scammed. Touch wood, we never get scammed.
Right.
So I think,
like maybe your advice for tenants coming to Singapore for the first time, how can they protect themselves?
My thought is this. So from a tenant point of view, whether you lease through a salesperson or what, I think the video call is very important. Video call, because to be fair, we do have tenant that actually call us from overseas WhatsApp just through normal message. Don't you see the room? Then they say they want the room. Actually, from our point of view,
and they want to pay deposit.
You're also scared.
We also scared, man.
It's very dangerous.
Yeah,
right?
Because to us is that, hey,
who are you?
Who are you? Then second thing is that, hey, who will just pay you money? So we got a certain criteria, say, okay, better video call.
Mm.
Because first of all, even if it's a genuine case, hey, we better do a video call to show the place so that to prevent misunderstanding. Because sometimes pictures, because sometimes my home tour, I show the room, right?
Mm.
But maybe I never show you the kitchen.
Yeah.
Mm.
Then later you come, you say that, well, how come the kitchen is like this?
Yeah.
How come the living room is so small? You know, things like that. So to prevent misunderstanding. Mm. So I always advise that, I think video call is very important.
Right.
Before you even put money down.
Right.
Yeah.
Yurong, maybe share with our audience, how would you advise a tenant on the key steps to ensure that they're transferring the deposit to the actual landlord and not to the agent or not to a fixed syndicate? What are some of the checks that you need to do?
Okay, I think like most importantly, usually if you are renting out from the owner, it's always good to run an ownership check. So from in-lease, you can buy $5.25. You'll know if this property is tagged to which name. And in short, like this name, if let's say for example, you are doing it via PayNow via NRIC, then that will of course be quite legitimate. Because it must be connected to the actual NRIC of the receiving person who you have confirmed that is the owner. You should not be paying any rental directly to the agents. Even though in the private property market, agents are able to collect a rental on behalf of the owner, HDB you can't. But best be safe to actually make payment directly to the owner itself. But of course, if you are renting from like a co-living space, then of course, I think you can make sure that whether they have a legitimate proper website, are you communicating with somebody? You can cross-check the agent that you're speaking to. Do they have a proper CA number, the license, whether the number they're communicating with is the actual number that was actually registered with the CA website. Does it look the same, etc.
I think these
are probably the steps you can take, but you cannot prevent 100% that you won't be scammed, because these are syndicates, right? They have gone through all the things to do all the required
and
duplicates.
They're located overseas, they're not even in Singapore.
Yeah. And of course, I think like these scams arise from mainly because of the rising rental interest,
rental
pricing, right? And sometimes if you're looking at deals that are too good to be true, fantastic price, the pictures look great, very renovated, location is perfect, then maybe you got to think twice or so. If such a good listing, why is it still there at such an attractive rate for you to take up?
Yeah, and I think importantly is to only rent units that are listed on legitimate portals. Yeah, don't go to fake portals. Yeah,
Property Guru, this kind.
Because Property Guru, the big boys, they want to make sure that only agents can get an account from them. And secondly, all the units needs to be inserted with the unit number at the back end to ensure that it's a genuine listing. So if you're not a property agent with no registration in CA, you cannot get an account on Property Guru. Yeah. So you go to
Facebook group, Gumtree.
This
will be more likely to be scammed.
Okay. Thank you, Staff Sergeant Ong. I'm going to cut out this portion, right? I'll submit to Singapore Police Force and CA so that they will just publish this 3-minute segment on how to ensure that you run for the...
Can you give me a better ranking, Staff? Than Staff Sergeant.
Inspector.
So this is like the Shen Inspector. The
you want to give him soup.
Then you need to cut in the crime watch border.
Can my editor help me to put the...
No, this is Staff Sergeant. This is Superintendent.
Then after that, you have to have the mask hit.
This is
guy
paid,
like that.
Paid actors to do
the... guy, the guy like that one. The police poster.
But the guy is very good looking.
The guy is Ryan. The guy is my army mate.
Okay, so invite him here. Okay.
Then
we can do the great
signature post. Great. Okay, we're so thankful.
Everywhere.
We're so thankful to have Eugene. Thank you so much for your precious time. I think not easy because you are now expanding overseas. Want to wish you all the best in your expansion, also running your business. And I think congratulations. You're such a great success over the past years. And I think many years to come. Thank you for coming on to share from tenant, landlord, operator, as well as the current market trending point of view. Mm-hmm. And thankful to have you. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you, Melvin. Thank you, Grace.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Bye.